All right, chapter 6. Common stock valuation. Oh, boy, folks, are you in for a treat? You are going to learn techniques that most investors never even know existed. Will it make you a better investor? Maybe. She'll give you one, relax. What I hope it does for you is tilt the odds in your favor and show you that there really is valuation out there. There really is something behind these millions and trillions, billions of pieces of paper that people trade each day. Well, they're not even pieces of paper anymore. Are you okay? You got allergies? Okay. Well, I wouldn't sit next to Wilson next time, okay? Okay. Okay. How we doing? God, not bad, because we got to finish up. All right. So, if you miss Thursday or Tuesday, you are going to come see me, right? Office hours, because we're going to learn calculations, and I often wonder about turning the calculations on their head and doing them first, and then going and reviewing them as we go along, but that wouldn't make any sense. I don't know how to do it. It's the best I can do. I apologize. Common stock valuation. Now, listen, be careful out there. Value matters. You ignore value at your peril. And this is a very successful mutual fund manager with over 35 years of experience, folks. So he's been doing it a long time. He knows what he says. Stock valuation. This is the process by which the underlying value of a stock is established on the basis of its forecasted risk and return performance. Okay, so we're going to look at this stock and say, okay, what's its upside? What's the return we're going to get? And what's the downside? At any given time, the price of a share of common stock depends upon investors' expectations about the future behavior of the stock. A fundamental assertion of finance holds that the value of a stock is based on the present value of its future cash flows. Well, what are the cash flows coming into a company? Earnings. What are the cash flows that are coming into a company?
Earnings.
So what's very important? Earnings, right. Don't fall in love with the stock. Look at what it's earning. The worth of a company is based primarily on the earnings the company will produce in the future. But if we knew what was going to happen in the future, would it be called the future? No. The most fundamental influence on stock prices is the level and duration of the future growth of earnings, and some companies' dividends pay dividends, so earnings have to be earned before they can be paid in dividends. However, future earnings growth is not easily estimated, even by market professionals. And this is from the Random Walk Down Wall Street. So if someone were to ask you, what is the most important factor in determining the value of a company, what would you say? Everyone should say it.
Future
earnings. You could also say future dividends, right? For companies that pay dividends, but some companies don't pay dividends. So for them, we just have to look at their earnings. But do any of us know what's going to happen in the future?
No.
So is valuing stock going to be easy? Hell no. Is valuing stock going to be easy?
No.
You're supposed to say no. Is valuing stock going to be easy?
No.
We're going to learn a few smoke and mirrors, if you will. We're going to learn a few. There are many, many more. And we'll see that we can tilt the odds in our favor, but it's no guarantee. And ultimately, we will just throw away all the numbers and ask ourselves, do we really want to own this company? Are you with me? Okay, good. Good. Security analysis is the process of gathering and organizing information and then using it to determine the value of a share of common stock. We are looking for the underlying, or what's called the inherent value, the intrinsic value of a stock as determined through the analysis that we do. But the question is, what security analysis method or measures does one use? Which methods or methods does one use to determine the intrinsic value of the company? Do we use future dividends? Do we use potential capital appreciation? Price earnings ratio, financial ratios, past price performance, amount of the risk? Value is in the eye of the beholder. It reminds me of the old the parable of the 10 blind men who are told to go look at the elephant. And they all feel different parts of the elephant, and they tell them different, they explain the elephant differently. Everybody's looking at the stock and seeing different things. We're going to learn about fundamental analysis. Fundamental analysis is the process of examining a firm's accounting statements and other financial and economic information to assess the economic value of a company's stock. Some of the fundamentals are the competitive position of the company. Is it Coke or is it Pepsi? Or is it Monster, which is now used to be called Hanson, is now called, which one do you have? Which one is that? What is that?
V8.
Who owns V8? That Campbell's soup? I'm not sure. Growth, I think it's Campbell's. Yeah, Campbell's owns V8. Growth prospects for company and its market. The profit margins, the company's earnings. What assets are available? The company's capital structure. How much debt? How much equity? Simply put, the value of a stock is influenced by the performance of the company that issued the stock. Now, there's a whole other world out there called technical analysis that uses all other techniques. I like fundamental analysis, which we'll discuss in Chapter 6 and Chapter 17. But you might say, no, I like what's going on. Is the party outside? You guys got to leave? Okay. Make sure you learn it, okay? Okay, good. Next class. One method of security analysis involves looking at certain financial ratio measures. Financial ratios, we already learned the PE, right? The P, price-to-earnings ratio. We've already learned a few financial ratios. Financial ratios give us a quick and easy method for comparing one company to other companies within their industry or the stock market as a whole. The problem with financial ratios is that there is no single financial ratio that can adequately sum up or summarize the overall general state of affairs, the situation, the predicament, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that the company finds itself in. You can't just say, ooh, look at the PE, or ooh, look at the turnover ratio, or these other ratios that we'll take a look at. Price to sales. You have to look at all of them and compare them together, and then look at their competitors, and then look at the market as a whole. The first financial ratios we will investigate will be what are called the price ratios. Price ratios. Then in chapter 17, we'll look at many others. So we're going to the next slide, which shows four different companies, and the only thing they have in common is they all begin with the letter F. Price to earnings ratio. Price divided by earnings. Now, we've already learned how to calculate this. Remember, it's not that hard. You take the price of the company at any one time, the market price, and you divide it by the company's earnings. And we're going to do that, but just look it up. It's on the website at any one time. So we take a look at FedEx. Now, would you want to own FedEx?
No.
Oh, well, maybe. That's why there's horse races, right? Some people say, yes, I want to earn FedEx. Some people own FedEx. Some people say, no. How about Ford? Farsbook? And what the hell is First Solar? What do you think they make?
Calculators?
No. Yeah, solar panels. They make solar systems. Okay, so solar system, did I say? solar electric systems. The most popular stock market statistic. Historically, PE ratios were in the 5 to 12 range for mature companies and 14 to 20 range for growing companies. Greater than 20 was unusual. This is from Chapter 5. You need to know this. If this looks like new stuff for you, you're not studying hard enough. In the 1990s and other times, PEs went skyrocketing. Now they're all over the map, as we'll see. We look at FedEx and we see a PE of 26. Now, what do you know by just without knowing anything else about FedEx? You didn't even know it existed. Just looking at the PE. Are investors optimistic or are they pessimistic? They're fairly optimistic, aren't they? Anything above 20 is pretty high. 14, 17 is pretty normal. Well, that's a judgment call. When you use the word better, it means you believe that it's a good investment. But remember the definition of value and growth? People would say it's a growth company. It's a high flyer. But others might say, well, it's too expensive. Are you with me? It by saying that it has a PE of 21.6, we are saying that investors are optimistic. But it doesn't necessarily mean who dots their O's. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're right. You with me? It's subtle, isn't it? You're looking at 26.1 and you're saying, well, investors are optimistic. We'll know in 3 years whether it was a good call. It's the future, right? Investors are having to put their money down now to buy or sell a stock and say, yeah, I'm pretty excited about FedEx. And investors are really, 26.1, that's pretty high. All right? Are you with me? You with me? Now, is there value there? Maybe, maybe not. Ford. Yeah. What are investors saying about Ford? Well, I don't know, folks. I don't know. First of all, I hate cars. Ask me about my bike, right? People in the United States and North America, they're doing actually pretty well in Mexico and Canada also. They like Fords. Ford's doing well in North America. How about Europe? No, it's doing pretty poor. And they don't even have a presence in Asia, do they? Well, it's going to be expensive, and everybody else is trying to get into Asia at the same time. Who's the biggest selling car in Asia, believe it or not? GM. I know, it's bizarre. GM sells more Buicks in China than they do in the United States. Isn't it crazy? At the same time, the Toyota and Honda, I'm not sure about Honda, but Toyota's having a rough time of it. Why? Not because Toyotas are not good cars. They're Japanese. And the Japanese they still remember Manchuria, and they're really upset, and they want those islands back from Japan. The Chinese do. So hey, what are you going to do? And then the Germans are trying to move into China in a big way. The BMWs and the Mercedes Benz and Volkswagens. So Ford's kind of on the outs for them, and investors are not too excited. Now, what do you think? You think they're going to stick around? Yeah, we'll know in 3 years, all right? I think investors are definitely too downbeat on Ford. But that's just me. Doesn't mean I'm right. But we can say that investors are not very optimistic about Ford's prospects. Now, what do we have to do? We've got to go look at GM's PE. We've got to go look at Honda and Toyota. And the Mercedes-Benz, Daimler, and Toyota, and Volkswagen. You understand? We got to go look at their competitors. How about Farsbook? What do you think that's going to be? She's absolutely right. Because before she wanted us to buy Facebook before their earnings out, their earnings trounced. If you had looked at that before their earnings a few weeks ago when the class started, it was 200. It was 200. What's going on? If the earnings grow, what happens to the dividend? I mean, not the dividend. What happens to the quotient? It goes down. So the price can go up and make the amount bigger, or the price can go down and make the amount bigger, or the earnings can grow and make the amount smaller, or if the earnings grow, the amount gets bigger. So that's the numerator and denominator. But still, 112? Investors are rolling the dice with Facebook. But everywhere you see, Facebook, follow us on Facebook, follow us on Facebook. I'm sorry? They bought Instagram and then they bought, what's that one? What's up? It's an app. I mean, how hard would it be for Facebook to write their own? I don't understand that one. That doesn't mean I don't have $19 billion to buy WhatsApp. But I'm sorry, I'm always. You think?
Personally,
do you use it? WhatsApp?
Well, because it's international, so like you can communicate and not be charged.
Cool.
So recently, a family member went over there. So.
And they like it.
Yeah. and I keep saying to change it because it works better. What's that? I think it's Plus.
Text Plus?
Is another one that is an international, like, communicating, but it doesn't work very well.
Do you think it's worth $19 billion? What's that? I don't think so either. But that's not my money.
Yeah.
I'm sorry? They had spare change. They wanted to buy it. What? Oh, sure. But still, it's still $19 billion. You know, you could buy a car company for that much. You know, you could buy. Remember, you could buy Marriott International and still have money left over. But they wanted WhatsApp. And how hard would it be for them to write their own? That's the question I have. Why not? Anyway, it doesn't matter. How does Facebook make money? Right. They made some of their money off of going to the advertisers, going to the companies and saying, look, we can give you all this information about our users. We know what they want to buy before they even want to ask to buy it. Whereas Google, they have to wait until they actually ask. Oh, I'm interested in pepperoncinis. But Facebook says, we already know they're interested in pepperoncinis. Show them the ad before they even know they want to buy it. But that's not enough to justify the valuation. What investors believe is that it's users of Facebook are going to click on those ads on the side.
We do.
You do?
Well, they also come up in your news.
And they sneak them into your news feed. And you go, ooh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to click on that advertisement. I'm sorry? That's how you get virus?
Apple, you never get.
Wait a minute. I've heard Apple get viruses.
I had 3 PCs go down in 1 year and I bought an Apple and I've had it for 4 years.
Okay, good. Okay, so I'm the wrong person to ask because I don't even use the damn thing. The only reason I created Wonder Professor, the Facebook account, is so somebody else wouldn't grab it. I just learned that my presentations for this class are being have been translated into Chinese. Anybody know Chinese? It's on a website called 163.com, which is supposedly... Is that a big... I don't know anything about that.
They translated it.
But there's one woman, I guess it's a woman, sent me an email saying, I like it better on your website, because she's really good at English skills, I can tell. I didn't talk with her, but it was all email. And so check out 163.com. I call it up, and all I see is, I don't have a Chinese font installed in my browser, so it just looks like one of these boxes. So if people continue to click on these ads, then Facebook's going to outdo Google. You with me? Understand? That's why Google is pushing Google Plus, because they want to learn all about you and know what you're going to want before you even want it.
It's like another profile for them.
Right.
To categorize you.
Right. Ain't going to happen to me. On my Facebook page, you go to my Facebook page, it says, I do not use Facebook. Do not try to friend me. Contact me through wonderprofessor.com. I got 40 friend requests. Most different people, I don't even know who the hell they are. It's maxed. It won't do anymore. I don't know. And it says, I don't use Facebook. Anyway. Okay, and then First Solar. Who the hell are they? Solar systems, right. Are investors excited? Not really. A few years ago, it was 200. Then it was down to 30. Then it was up to 60. Now it's down to 11.6. I don't know. I already got my solar system. It'll pay for itself in about 5-6 years from now. What? No, it's not that much. No. Our panels are still producing pretty much what they produced 10 years ago when we bought them. After 20 to 30 years, then they start degrading. But the ones that were built back in the 50s and 60s are still producing electricity. They outlive you. That's the cool thing about solar panels. They outlive you. Now, ours are still producing what they produced 10, 12 years ago. They're a lot better. Yeah, they're a whole lot. They just keep getting better. Don't worry, you'll have them eventually. Okay, historically. Okay, we got a couple more slides. A P.E. ratio was supposed to match its growth rate. If a company was growing at 20% per year, then a P.E. of 20 was justified. During the internet bubble, many companies had P.E. ratios in the hundreds. I will never, ever forget looking down at the machine, the Quotron machine, which are gone, but this was at the brokerage firm in 99. P.E. of eBay was 10,000. And I'm thinking, okay, this ain't going to last. This is not going to last. Growth stocks, as we said, typically have high P.E. ratios. Value stocks have typically low P.E. ratios. So in the previous slide, they'd say, oh, Facebook and FedEx are growth stocks and Ford is a value stock. But does that necessarily mean that Ford is a good value? Or that FedEx is not a good value? No, not the way I use the term. The P.E. ratio tells you how long it will take in years, assuming no changes in earnings, but they're changing all the time, for the company to earn back its price. So you have a P.E. of 3. That means in 3 years, assuming the earnings doesn't change, the earnings do not change, and the price does not change, you'll earn back the price. P.E. of 20, it'll take 20 years. A P.E. of 10,000. We were worried about the Y2K problem in 98, 99. They have to worry about the Y10K problem. What's going to happen when we go from year 9,999 to year 10,000? We have to start preparing for that. No, we're not. We'll all be comfortably dead by then, yes. But some of you millennials, who knows? It might be by 100 years from now, you'll still be alive, and they might have figured out immortality. Google's working on it. Google, that's what I read. I believe everything I read on the internet. Okay, so now let's take a look at price to cash flow. Price to cash flow is the same idea as price to earnings. I was looking for where I was going to start this, and I always had a bad start. Price to earnings takes a look at the price and relates it to the earnings. Price to cash flow relates the price to the cash flow. Now, wait a minute. What's the difference between earnings and cash flow? You accounting students know that cash flow and earnings are usually two different things, because earnings are what the IRS say they are, and that's how we pay our taxes. But in accounting, you often have transactions where you don't actually write a check out to this expense, but still you're able to reduce your earnings. And the most important one, or the biggest one normally, is depreciation. You accounting students, did you write out a check to depreciation? No, you are just allowed to reduce your earnings a certain amount, depending on what assets you have, as they depreciate. But that money is still in the pocket. It's still in your checkbook. It didn't go out the door. But it did reduce your earnings, so you don't have to pay as much taxes. So that you also want to not just look at their price to earnings, you want to take a look at their price to cash flow. You want to see how much cash is actually being generated by the company. There are also some times where you'll hear people talk about good quality earnings and poor quality earnings. During the internet mania, and it happens not just during manias, but it happened big time in the internet mania, many companies were reporting record earnings, and at the same time, they had negative cash flow. Their checkbooks were going down. Now, how you tell me how you can be earning record amounts and your cash flow is going down? How could that happen? Well, it was actually very easy. Have you heard of Lucent Technologies? Huh? They used to be part of AT&T, Bell Labs, Western Electric. They make some of the best telephone equipment in the world. At the end of the 1990s, there were new companies starting up, telecommunications companies, internet companies, that needed these telecommunication equipment that Lucent was building. You may have heard of Windstar. No, you didn't. They're gone. They went out of business. But they went to Lucent and a bunch of other companies and said, hey, we'd like to buy $2 billion worth of your equipment. But you know what? No bank will lend us the money. We don't have the cash. Will you be the bank? Will you sell us $2 billion worth of equipment, and then we will pay you $200 million for the next 30 years every year? You see what just happened? Record earnings, but they didn't get the cash. They are owed the money from these companies that are just starting up and trying to strike it rich in the internet mania and the telecommunications craze. And what happened? They went bye-bye. And they give back the telecommunications equipment to Lucent, which is now obsolete, 6 months old. And you see what can happen? Lucent almost went bankrupt. And I kept telling myself, buy it. Went from 80 down to 80 cents. And I was saying, buy it, buy it, buy it. It went back up to 3, and then it merged with a French company. The last one we'll take a look at is price to sales, and I'll let you go. Same idea. Price to earnings, price to cash flow, price to sales. We're going to relate the price to the sales. And during the internet mania, many analysts were using price to sales instead of price to earnings because many of these new companies never generated any earnings, and it didn't look like they were going to generate any earnings for another 10 years or so. But let's buy them anyway. Look how much their sales are growing. They keep selling more. They keep losing more, but someday they're going to go bankrupt. Okay, when we come back, study this. When we come back, we will learn how to actually make money. We'll learn to actually predict the future using these ratios, using these models. Okay? So bring your 99-cent calculators, or if you have a laptop, or bring if you need calculators, get your 99-cent calculator and bring it on Thursday. See you. Snuck in late. Good job, everybody.